Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. It's show 48 of the Retro Computing Roundtable. And everything is all back to normal, or abnormal as it were. We're all here at least. It's Sunday, April 14th, and like always, we're streaming live over at youtube.com/RCRpodcast. The RCR is hosted by CyberEars. You can have them host your podcast and audio files too. Go to cyberears.com for more details. It's me, Earl, hosting, and with me as always is Garth. No, actually, I have David and Carrington. So let's start with alphabetical order here. Carrington, what's going on with you, buddy?
Me, Carrington. Just busy. Oh, my gosh, so busy the last few weeks. I've been basically off the net for a couple weeks because I've been just crazy overwhelmed with work. But it is all wrapped up now, so my life is once again my own. Hooray.
And you had to travel around and stuff?
I did, only a little bit. I was in the States for a bit, and then I was in Montreal on Friday and Saturday. But not too much travel, just crazy work.
It feels good when you come out from under something like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it would feel good if I didn't get under in the first place.
That's true. Yeah. Well, sometimes you gotta be sick to appreciate being well or whatever.
I don't though. I really don't. I appreciate being well right now.
So, David, what's going on with you? Speaking of being busy.
Yeah, been very busy. So obviously got a regular job, but then spend lots of time in the evenings doing everything for the show, the VCF SE. So I've been spending the last three Saturdays all day long over at the venue, you know, the CompUSA, former CompUSA. But it's all coming along really well. So now we're looking at less than a week. So really 5 days for the big official setup day.
Are the springs tight in the museum, ready to pop up?
Yeah.
Will it actually like pop up
But next Friday, so I took Friday off and the following Monday, because Friday's the big setup day. All the tables and chairs get delivered for our side of things, and then exhibitors show up, and then Saturday and Sunday's the show.
Cool.
And then we're doing our show. I guess we mentioned it now. I'll mention it again. I finally added that just today to our official schedule. So, and Carrington, you're all good for that?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So next Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern. So. Okay.
Yeah, and as Mr. Host, I should mention that it is one of the reasons why we're going to keep today's show a little bit on the shorter side. So bad news, we're a little abbreviated today, but good news is that we're going to give you double the fun. We'll have a show next Saturday live from the VCF Southeast, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah, because basically, I guess everybody in the audience there will see what I'm seeing. You know, I'll just basically put my screen up on the big screen. So that should be fun, though.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
And there's a couple points here I can pan out and show people to our YouTube audience.
And are you also going to talk about that a little bit at the end when we do our round the table? Maybe give a link or that kind of
thing? Yeah, me? Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I will.
Excellent. Well, normally we do a host topic, but today we're not going to do that because we're doing an abbreviated show.
I don't hear your excuses, Earl.
And the topic that I want to talk about might get into some protracted discussion. So I like them too. I like to work the angles. So, Carrington, why don't you kick us off with something about Bill Gates and Paul Allen?
I'm still recovering from your joke. But,
So, didn't be obtuse.
There is a classic Microsoft photo from 1981 of Gates and Allen posing amongst a bunch of computers. Well, they got together recently, and they recreated the photo. So I just think it's kind of fun. So there's a link we'll have in the show notes to a Forbes site. And you can see the original photo in black and white of Bill Gates and Paul Allen. And they are surrounded by an Apple II and a TMC S9 monitor, an Intertech Superbrain computer. Mm-hmm. Like there's some bizarre things there. I think originally it was a Datapoint 8200. They swapped it for this latest photo. They couldn't get all the exact same computers. But there's a Sanyo computer and a Zenith Z19 and a Commodore PET. And I think a TRS-80 Model 1. So anyway, it's sort of neat that they did this. What struck me and surprised me from the photo is in the description. It says there's a baby-faced Gates and bearded Allen together. And now they're posing again. And what I found bizarre was in the description of the original photo, it describes how Bill Gates was just 28 and Paul Allen was 26. But when you look in the photo, Paul Allen looks like 45.
Yeah.
I always assumed he was way older than Gates, and he's actually younger, but he had the full beard, and Gates always looked young for his age. So
I actually thought he was older, too. I didn't know that.
Totally new to me. I was like, what? What do you mean he's 26 in that photo?
And actually, it strikes me, I'm not looking at the photo now, but I looked at them. It strikes me that, I guess, obviously, since Paul Allen also shaves the beard off, Gates looks, to me, much older now.
I think Paul Allen still looks older.
You do?
Bill Gates is sort of like eternally young. He is the youth that only multiple billions of dollars can bring.
But in that first picture, he still looks like he's 28 in that. He looks like he's 14.
I did notice that in the new photo, and I don't think it was on purpose, but the computers are all positioned around. They look all pretty much the same. But they've positioned it so that the Apple II is fully blocked now. You can only see the disk drive and the monitor. The two has been... has been blocked out by nice move there, Bill.
you know why
photo, I just need to see it recreated.
And you know why they took that photo, right?
Carrington? Nope.
It was for the official opening of the Living Computer Museum in Seattle.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Was it for the opening, or was it for I thought they were having a special get-together
like
evening.
A party, yeah.
Yeah, they were having a party there. I thought that was one of the coolest things is that it was, you know, all happened just a couple hours north of me.
Mm-hmm. So that was it. That's our first bit of news. I just want to kick it off with a photo.
They had several big names, I think, at that get-together. It was quite a collection of computer pioneers.
I know that they also had Paul Terrell was there. I know a number of other people, too, but he's a guy
Byte Shop guy?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's kind of interesting, right, considering he's well-known now because of selling the first Apple I's.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
So not really a Microsoft connection there. But.
And who else was there? I think maybe Lee Felsenstein was there, too.
Maybe so.
But speaking of computer pioneers, you've got some news on that front, too, right, David?
Yeah. Let me get back over to the notes here. So... yeah, really, really interesting article, and this is one of those things, too, where, you know, I'm ashamed to say I didn't know that Ivan Sutherland was still alive. It's like, why wouldn't he be, I guess, unless you heard he died. But he's kind of a name a lot of people aren't that familiar with. But anyway, there's an interview over at Time with Harry McCracken. So I'm trying to get there. A talk with computer graphics pioneer Ivan Sutherland. And there's a great video there. It's from 1964 of where they demoed what was called Sketchpad. And Sketchpad is kind of in the lineage of where we are now at the graphical user interface. It was sort of the first time that anybody saw or a person sort of interacted with a computer in the sense of you could do something and the computer immediately responded.
Yeah,
it
used to be one of those little light pens.
Yeah, now it's kind of neat because it's like you don't see those anymore even, you know, and that seems pretty advanced for back then.
Well, I remember Steve Jobs talking about this and saying, if you see a light pen, they blew it.
Oh, yeah?
No. Don't listen to what I say.
So in the article, I think Ivan Sutherland, he's 74 now. So, and he's done a lot of other things. And so we'll just quickly mention it. It's a very interesting article and some of the stuff he's done now. But obviously he's most well known for what he did back then. And so a lot of the stuff with Sketchpad, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe Alan Kay worked with Ivan Sutherland or was highly influenced by him, then he went on to Xerox PARC. So you sort of have this lineage of Ivan Sutherland with Sketchpad, and then now I'm going blank, Engelbart, you know, with the mouse and the stuff at Stanford, and then Xerox PARC in the early 70s, and then, of course, Apple leaping onto that technology, and then, you know, we're all here sitting in front of, you know, this the graphical user interface and stuff, which sort of all came out of that. Graphic-based displays.
GUIs are a fad.
They're getting old.
I think cerebral implants are the way to go.
I'm shaved and ready. Bring it on.
Oh, you are for your implant?
Yep.
You need a little port?
Yeah, you need like the little matrix thing.
I do need a little matrix thing.
What is reality?
Yeah, I guess I should move on. Somewhere out there, there's somebody, you know how people get their body, they get piercings and body manipulation stuff. I guess there's people walking around, they got fake little matrix ports on the back of their heads, don't they?
That's interesting. You could do that.
I'm sure someone's probably doing that crazy stuff.
Huh, I haven't seen that. In a kind of future dystopia sort of way. But what's not dystopian is retro computing. So I'm going to talk about the Chicago Cocoa Fest. And this is, again, the last Chicago Cocoa Fest. We talked about this.
Once again, the last one.
That's right. The last time they had it, they put in quotes last because, of course, with these shows.
They always call it that.
Yeah, they always call it that because you never know when it
it's
really
will be.
It's the
latest in a long line of last episodes. It's awesome.
It is. So the 22nd annual last Chicago Cocoa Fest will be held in Lombard, Illinois. And they say note a new location because this has moved from Elgin to Lombard. And the dates are coming right up. They're Saturday, April 27th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., evening social from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., where I hope they serve cocoa. That was good, wasn't it? And also Sunday, April 28th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. This year's theme is Send in the Clones. And I'm not sure what that means, except maybe they're talking about cocoa clones like the dragon, that kind of thing. They're expecting to include a laser show as part of the festivities, and admission is $5 per person, so that's not going to break the piggy bank. We have a for more information link, which is too long for me to scrabble off right here, but we'll have it up in the show notes.
Wasn't it in conjunction with the VCF Midwest, on the Emergency Commodore show?
I don't think so. I don't think
I could swear the one that I went to, it was there in 2011.
Honestly, I thought it was the same thing. I thought they were combined.
Really?
Yep.
Well, it could have. I mean, they don't mention anything about that here. Let me actually go to the link.
Yeah, and Lombard, Illinois, is where the other one is too.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything about a co-located show.
A co-located. I can do it too.
Nicely done.
Boy, my computer is dragging bad.
Next weekend, everyone can go to VCF SE. Oh, that's terrible, Earl. And then the weekend after that, you can head out to Cocoa Fest. So two weekends in a row, very good events.
Oh, so it's a different weekend.
There's so much good stuff coming up. For instance, Carrington, there's this show called Kansas Fest, I think.
Yep.
What do you do in Kansas with retro computers?
You guys know. You know all so well. I thought I'd throw this in here because we're talking about events, and we've spoken about Kansas Fest before, but the registration has officially opened for 2013 Kansas Fest. I have registered, so I'm all signed up, and I'm definitely going, and hopefully I will see a bunch of our listeners there. I'm really looking forward to it. It's like the highlight of my year. Can't wait.
It really is an amazingly good time. And like I had a chance to chat recently with Ken and Mike. They reluctantly had me on Open Apple. And I won't give much away because it hasn't published yet. But during the chat, I mentioned I'm off to Japan really close to that time period. And so I'm not going to be able to make this year's Kansas Fest. And it is just absolutely killing me because I tell you, that is the time of your life going to that show.
But that's a big vacation for you, the Japan trip, right?
Yeah, that's like a lifelong dream kind of thing. So, but anyway, yes, Kansas Fest 2013, go if you can. Even go if you can't, you must go to Kansas Fest.
It's hypocritical for you to say that.
Go if you can.
Okay. Sorry, do as I say, not as you do.
Oh, I see. But yeah, if people are free, there's nothing else like it in the retro computing community. For Apple fans or otherwise. Like, it's just, if you're free, I can't recommend it enough.
Just if you're a general retro fan, not even necessarily an Apple fan. I mean, you're absolutely right, Carrington, that there's other shows, there's other things, but there's nothing like this where you go and stay in a dorm and just, you know, 24/7 retro heaven.
This will be the first year I'm going to enter into Hackfest, but I don't know what I'm going to do, but I can't keep going to this thing and not entering Hackfest. So this year I am writing software while I'm there.
You should do something with Martin Hayes' stuff, the Coding Dangerously with Short and with Supermon.
I may be too cowardly.
But it sounds like fun, though.
Yeah, I'm going to do something. I'm not sure what. Probably some sort of game, because I'm keen on the game. So I think I will try to make some sort of game while I'm there. We'll see what happens when I get there. You're not allowed to really do much ahead of time, so it's more that I'm going to think in terms of vaguely what might be good, and then you have to do the whole thing while you're there, so you don't have to prepare at all. So.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things about that, though, is you don't start coding until you're on the ground.
Yep.
So what else is going on here? Gosh, you put lots of stuff in here, Carrington. Should I mix it around a little bit, though?
I won't be going to Kansas Fest just since we're talking about it. So
yeah, that's a shame too.
I kind of got this big show going on here. It's taking a lot of time, and my family's too working.
Yeah.
So it's really going to be a family. Now we need to take a family vacation. But Carrington, you think we're going to try to do like what we're doing here? You want to try to do a remote?
Oh, sure. There? Yeah, there's a good pipe there for internet connections, so there's no reason why we can't do the show. I don't know if it falls into the regular schedule, but I'll record something from there regardless.
Oh, we could do it off schedule, just or it, do a special
from your room,
like we're doing with the VCFSE. So some of the other stuff we got going here. Disney shuts down LucasArts. Oh, no.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
But I heard, though, a lot of people talking about this and saying basically that, yes, it's a shame, but it's not the LucasArts that we knew and loved from the past.
That's exactly what my opinion is as well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what LucasArts games did you guys play?
I think the first one I ever played was Maniac Mansion. But I played most of them. I played Loom, Secret of Monkey Island, of course, Escape from Monkey Island, and those sorts of things as well. I did the Star Wars games later on, and so many of them. But for me, they haven't made a great game since, I guess, Grim Fandango. They became just a publishing house, not a game development house anymore. So I don't see it as a big loss. Like, to me, it feels like LucasArts actually shut down, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah. A lot of years ago, my wife and I played through Day of the Tentacle.
Oh, great one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is just a hilarious game. It's got so much humor in it. Plus, it was just fun. I love that game. What about you, David? Did you play any other games?
Yeah, I was just looking it up because there's a favorite of mine, but it's from years ago, and now I can't think of it. But it basically, it came out across different platforms, but it actually came out a new game for the Commodore 64 in, like, 91. And it was like I can't think of what it's called, but it was, Night Shift. That's what it's called, Night Shift. And it was basically sort of like a big machine, and you'd have to run up and down it so it would scroll up this way. And basically it was just a big machine that made Lucas toys. So you had little Darth Vader figures and little Indiana Jones and stuff, and it would do the head, the body, the legs, and other stuff, and it would mess up. And you had to keep wax flowing in it and all this other stuff, and things would break and things would mess up, and it's like a I Love Lucy game, I guess.
Now, when you had a Commodore 64, I could have swore that you said you didn't have a disk drive. So how did you play this game?
I didn't originally, but I had I bought a brand new Commodore 64, actually a 64C, in the spring of 91. So after me and my wife got married, and we moved to Germany in the Army, and I was waiting for my Mac to be shipped. Mm-hmm. And I had some extra money, and so I spent, I think it was $200, I bought a brand new Commodore 64 to mess around with.
So this was a second Commodore 64.
Yeah, because my original one had gotten stolen.
Right. Got it.
That's right, yes. So anyway, for me, LucasArts will always be, like, I have a real soft spot in my heart for them because of, like, the games we mentioned and because of things like The Dig and Full Throttle and, like, just so many amazing games. But I think of them as a great game maker in the late 80s and through the 90s. And then they've pretty much been dead to me since then. So they've done nothing except Star Wars games, I think, since then. Anyway, I can't think of
them. Oh, yeah. That's Star all Wars I remember, the DOS days.
So it makes sense that it's just going to be Star Wars games now that Disney has it. Because, you know, Star Wars is now a Disney brand. I think they want to keep them separate or keep them on brand that way. So I'm not really surprised by it. I'm not surprised by the groundswell of maybe disappointment on the internet, but I think it's a little misplaced. I think we're just thinking nostalgically of what LucasArts used to be, and they just haven't been that for a while. So
now, related to this, though, so when Disney bought Star Wars, but don't they own Indiana Jones too, or no?
Maybe.
Did they also acquire Indiana Jones?
I don't know.
Where they could make other movies and I guess possibly make other games and stuff?
Because all the hype has been around Star Wars with the announcement that they're going to bring out the three new movies. And that kind of thing.
Don't know.
I'll look it up.
All right.
I'll look it up.
Well, you do that. Carrington, man, it's lots of stuff by Carrington.
All good stuff,
so I can't skip any of it. So, Carrington, tell me about the history of the modern graphics processor. What's
well, there's
that?
A four-part series that's just started up over at techspot.com, and it's the history of the GPU. And I found it a really interesting little article, and so it talks about graphics processor units. This first section is dealing with 1976 to 1995, and then there's three more parts planned to bring it up to the present. This is probably the article that I'm and our listeners are probably going to find the most interesting. And it deals with, you know, the idea of GPUs in early console games, then the standalone stuff in PCs, the effect on things like Quake. It deals with the APIs and, you know, Direct3D and all that kind of stuff. It was a really interesting wrap-up. A lot of us listening to the show probably lived through all these years and saw the developments and the battles over GPU standards and rage and all that kind of stuff. So it was just an interesting wrap-up, and I haven't seen somebody write a really good, detailed summary like this before. So it's over at techspot.com. I'll have a link in the show notes.
Wow. Well, yeah. I have to read that.
It's not something that you sort of hear about too much.
What's that, David?
So I just said, you know, the GPU, I mean, we hear about it, because it's become a lot more prominent with modern, I think, cell phones and gaming systems and other stuff, but you don't really hear a lot about it otherwise. The history
I used
of it.
To. Yeah. Back in gaming and stuff like that, like the battles between NVIDIA and ATI and stuff like that. You're like,
and that battle's still going on.
Sure.
Yeah, and but, I mean, you did have GPUs even in some of these earliest computers. I mean, if you think about the Atari 400-800 with the Antic chip and the...
Oh, and sure. And over on No Quarter, Mike McGinnis and I, we have that arcade show we do every week. And we're always talking. And, like, when we talk about the specs for pretty much every classic arcade game we talk about in those, they're always using discrete graphics chips. Even back then, it'll be... You know, there's a 6502 as the main processor, and there'll be some Z80 or a Pokey chip or something that is the graphics chip or a dedicated sound chip. A lot of times it's a dedicated sound. But frequently it'll be a dedicated graphics thing or something. So I think GPUs came on pretty hard and heavy by the 80s. And just unless you were a gamer for a lot of times, though, it wasn't a big deal for home systems. Mm-hmm. I remember agonizing over my GPU choices.
Oh, yes. I have broken into a cold sweat more than once over should I get an ATI or an NVIDIA. But I'm curious what you guys prefer. Over time, I think I've decided that I like the NVIDIA systems a little bit better.
Over time, I decided I didn't care anymore, and I became a console gamer.
Ah, very good.
That's pretty much me.
Yeah. The battle finally wore me down. Yeah. Yeah, I became a Mac user and a console gamer and a gamer on things like iPhones and iPads.
Yeah, it's kind of a moot point as far as on the Mac. Hey, there's an interesting tie-in with this article, too, is that if you look at that YouTube video, the first one it ties into, it says Evans and Sutherland, the tactical edge, and that's Ivan Sutherland.
Ah.
I thought they might. It would make sense that he was. But I was thinking of him, thinking of this article when you were earlier talking about him. I thought, I wonder if
he went on to do, you know, like flight simulation stuff. All the graphics, you know, makes sense, right? Graphics related and all.
Right.
And lastly, over to Carrington.
Back to me, baby.
Oh, again. This stuff has just been cool, isn't it? These vintage computers made out of Lego.
We've talked about them before.
Really taken off.
Yeah, we've talked about them a couple times before, small Lego kits and that kind of stuff. And so a new one's come out, and another one is for sale. So I thought I'd summarize the three big ones that are available at the moment. So there's a new Apple II in Lego. Chu Sang, I guess it's pronounced. And we'll have a link to his Flickr site, and he's got a great little Apple II, and including the inside bit. So it's not just the shell. Like you assemble, you can open up and look inside, and there's the slots and stuff. So it's a really well-made Apple II out of Lego. There's also Commodore 64 by Chris McVeigh. And that is one that's great-looking and is about to come out. So you can actually buy that in kit form, and they're taking pre-orders right now. Now, when I look at that, the keyboard on it, though, I think it looks more like a VIC-20 than a 64 because it's got the space bar with no buttons beside it. It's like separate. And to me, that's the thing that makes the VIC-20 versus the Commodore 64 with it all square. So I think he's messed up on the keyboard there a little. Yeah. And then also, we spoke of this one earlier, also by Chris McVeigh. He's the guy who did the Macintosh out of Lego. And so there's a guide now on the same site where you can pre-order the Commodore 64. There's a PDF you can download. It's powerpig.ca is the site, it looks like. And you can download the Macintosh build guide. So it shows you all the parts that would go into that Macintosh kit that you can no longer get and what various kits they would come out of. Or you can now on Lego, you can order individual parts. There's an entire parts list with all the part numbers, and so you could just order them directly from the Lego site and assemble your own little tiny vintage Macintosh. So we'll have links to all three of these in the show notes.
Very nice.
Kind of expensive, though, huh?
It's Lego. Almost. Of course it is.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely give Legos away, I found.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not really Lego, though. It's
$50, and it's only like that big, I think. So.
I wonder, does Lego have any problem?
Those listening at home, the that big was in color.
Does Lego have any problem with people reselling Legos?
That's a good question.
I mean, it's a physical object. I don't think they could stop you.
Can't stop me.
I ain't afraid of no ghost.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think there'd be anything wrong with that, unless you somehow misrepresented and, you know, said that, gave people the impression this is a Lego product or something like
right.
that. And then I think you'd be in exceedingly hot water.
I think somebody should put together a little tiny made out of Lego VCF SE. David, I think you should do that.
Yeah.
Put it in a little kit, a little vintage pop-up. It'd be awesome.
The whole show floor, I think, yeah, should be represented there.
A little tiny David to run it made out of Lego. It'd be awesome.
You know, it's funny. I think it's pretty much okay for me to say this, but and at the Apple Pop-Up Museum, Lonnie Mims, you know, they talked about trying to get a VW bus, you know, to represent the VW bus that Steve Jobs sold, and it became too cost prohibitive. And then they thought about, well, maybe we could just do a big post, you know, a big picture of one, put it on a wall. And then I said, you know, because we go to Lego store very often, there's a really nice VW bus Lego
right.
set. It's like $130, but it's actually a camper bus, so it's not exactly the same kind. But so he ended up buying that, and they built it, and you know, so it's like in a case on the wall going into the one Apple, or the pre-Apple room or whatever. And, so it's kind of neat.
Fun.
So that represents the VW bus of Steve Jobs.
You guys are going to take lots of great pictures and video.
Yes.
And that kind of thing.
And I intend to do as much video as I possibly can, too.
So, excellent.
And now we're going to, I know that all the speakers are going to be recorded. We're going to stream the, you know, our podcast as well as the Retro Maccast right onto YouTube, like what we're doing right now. So I'm going to try to do as much as that as I can too, interview people, exhibitors, and stream it immediately.
Awesome.
So we'll see, because I have a lot of duties going on. So yeah, there's still going to be plenty of pictures and lots of, you know, video taken.
So you think you're actually going to have something to do while you're there?
Huh? Yeah, I think so.
Can't find your peers?
Hey, guys!
Wrong information.
One eggplant sliced thin.
Need better tools? Meet your peers. Get the information you need and find the right technology for your business at Comdex Fall 2001, where buyers and sellers meet, learn, and make technology decisions. Register now at Comdex.com.
Now, laptops have become such an important part of the computer business, they have their own convention now. Laptop 89, held just a few weeks ago in New York. Here's a report.
There were several main themes here at Laptop 89, and one of them was certainly the continuing drive to pack more power into a smaller package.
You can't hardly find a person here who wouldn't like to have a lighter laptop computer with all the functionality that is available in some of the heavier form factors.
Zenith was showing off its new Mini Sport with 2-inch floppy disks. If you really want to go small, there were the credit card size storage devices being demonstrated by Comco. If you want bulk and don't care about size, Future Communications was showing off its portable CD-ROM drive. Another main theme was communications. TouchBase Systems demonstrated their new pocket modem with a fax card built in. And Vital Communications was selling a Nest for a laptop that adds not only a modem and a fax card, but also a cellular phone, complete with built-in antenna.
All right, well, on to retro computing gift ideas, because we love giving gifts.
Should we check in with our audience? Like, has David?
Oh, yeah, David. Anything on the comments? That's a good point, Garrett.
One of our regular viewers, Randall Kindig, was earlier talking about, you know, he's coming to the show, so I look forward to seeing him. And
that's awesome.
Randy, you know, he's got a new podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Floppy Days.
Floppy Days. Let's see. Louis Burmeister is one of our Watchers listeners right now. He's not able to make it. Let's see what else we got here. Oh, Louis said, though, he loves the games going on in the background, Carrington, better than Steve Gibson's PDP-8s. Oh, and he loved TIE Fighter. Still love that game. Oh, and then someone noticed, yeah, my AT-AT.
Oh, is that how you pronounce it? I've always said AT-AT.
Probably that's how you say it.
Oh, I don't know. You're the
authority. We all say it differently. I am an authority on it, though. So, yeah. Everybody say AT-AT. But do you know what it means? How about you, Earl? You know what AT-AT means?
I don't.
That's it on the comments, though. It means all-terrain armored transport.
Oh. Very nice. You would definitely beat me in Star Wars trivia.
So that's it on the comments.
You can ask Randy if he's, when's your next show? Isn't he should be just about due, because it was almost a month ago that episode 2 came out. Come on, Randy.
Yeah, I listened.
You're eager.
When, Randy?
Want more.
Now, answer. I'll let you know when he answers.
All right.
Cool.
Should I talk about gifts?
Yeah, please.
Because gifts are great.
And what are you going to buy me?
People should give us lots of gifts. Well, I guess I'll buy you a book. I've heard this book is really good. I don't have it myself, but in the spirit... Have either of you read Business is Fun?
No, but I gave one away. We gave a copy of this away on...
On No Quarter?
No Quarter. On what show am I on?
I've seen physical book at the president of our club, AHCS, Brad Arnold's got one. And the thing is huge.
Oh, is it?
So I read it or really had a chance to look through it other than just I saw the book. I mean, it's like gigantic, like this thick. You know, I'm holding my fingers about 3 inches or so.
I've heard nothing but good about
and
this
book. And
according
to the Amazon site, it is frequently bought together with Terrible Nerd, Kevin Savage.
Which
is so good. Terrible Nerd is so, so good. Oh, my gosh,
yes.
Everyone should run out and read it. I loved it.
And that he's such a terrible nerd, you know?
Oh, what a book, though. It was so amazing. I just couldn't put it down. I love the
and
writing style.
Of course,
style.
He's talking at the BCFSE. He's staying with me. I think it's okay to tell people that. He is staying right here.
He's coming out to the show? Kevin Savitz?
Yeah.
Awesome.
That is fantastic. I had
him stay with me. He's like, here, come be my buddy.
Very nice.
Yeah. He's a nice
anyway,
guy.
His book is amazing. I gobbled it up. I thought Terrible Nerd was fantastic.
You know, that's another good gift idea, in fact. And you can get either ebook or the physical book with Terrible Nerd. So maybe one of us should do that for the gift idea, one of these. Because
you already did.
Really, we did?
Well, we started doing it now.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
So I get two gift ideas. Two for the price of two.
Right.
Hello, vintage computer fans. My name is Randy Kindig, and I host the Floppy Days podcast, a monthly podcast about retro computers and calculators from a historical and modern-day perspective. I focus on things like historical significance, technical specs, peripherals, emulation, modern upgrades, connectivity to modern computers, current user groups and shows, current websites, popular magazines of the day, popular books in the day and today, popular software and TV ads of the day, and whatever other vintage computer-related topics come to mind. The idea is to have fun. There have already been episodes about my collection and about the granddaddy of the personal computer, the Altair 8800. The next episode will be about the TI-59 programmable calculator. Please visit iTunes or go to floppydays.libsyn.com. That's floppydays.libsyn.com to download the show and then let me know what you think. You can also leave voicemail at 206-426-7200 or send email to floppydays@gmail.com. I do this because I just love vintage computers. If you do too, please give a listen. Thank you.
All right. And if you've still got money left after that, which I'm sure you would, then you should go over to eBay auctions and buy Infocom Suspended. Shouldn't you, Carrington?
Yes. Yeah, my choice is I've got one of these. I think I held it up once on the video to show you guys. So I've got one of the Suspended. This is the Infocom game, probably, I guess this or the Saucer would be the two most famous Infocom boxes. This is the one with the mask. So this is the big one. 5 days left. It's bumped up to $123.50. When I picked it, it was really low. And so I was like, oh my God, somebody might be able to snag one for a song. It's not still shrink-wrapped the way mine is, although my shrink-wrap is torn. I better open that thing up soon. And but it does seem complete, and the box seems to be in better shape than mine is. So I'm picking it because it's one of the Infocom games I'm dying to play and I own, but I've never actually played it. And this one comes up every once in a while and normally goes for hundreds of dollars. It's crazily collectible. So at the moment at $123, it's going to probably go for a lot more than that, but you could, maybe you'll get lucky and chip in. So this is my, I'm bringing it up because it doesn't come on eBay that often. So.
No,
and it's the Apple II version, so hooray.
And, it's funny looking at the picture. So I would definitely say, and the person describes it this way, it has some wear, but it's in good display, display condition. You could put it on the shelf or whatever. It looks
yeah, I never see these in perfect shape. The boxes got beat up. This is a really early Infocom game, so I don't think people realized at the time this could be a crazily expensive collectible item, so people weren't just buying it and not touching it.
And if you've never seen this, listeners or watchers, it's just such a creepy mask, isn't it? The way the eyes are inset, and then when you look at the actual picture that's behind it, it's not like it's that scary or anything, but just the sort of its picture, it's just kind of interesting. This is my favorite Infocom game.
Oh, you played it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've never had this box, but I have. In fact, I own a few versions of it.
I've played a few. My favorite Infocom game, I think, of the ones I've played so far, would be the horror one. A Lurking Horror.
Yeah.
I adored that. That was a crazy awesome game. Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Infocom.
So it's funny, they didn't give these games away even back in the day, but if you would have taken one or two of each of the Infocom games, left them in the shrink wrap, and just stuck them in a cool, dry place for all these years, imagine the money you could have made.
Yeah, because even the not super collectible ones, if you have a really good condition, a Ballyhoo or something, still in shrink wrap, they go for hundreds of dollars. It's crazy, and let alone something like this. So one of these in perfect condition, still in shrink, probably be like a $900 game or something ridiculous, which I think is just completely asinine. Way more than I would ever spend on a game.
But some people would.
This one, like I said, is the Apple II version, which is normally what I'm always looking for in Infocom games. But those aren't usually the most collectible ones. I think the most collectible ones are still the PC versions, because they have sort of the biggest market for them. Most people play them on those, I think. So I do think that Infocom games in general are more collectible on the PC. But this is one of the most collectible versions for the Apple II, because it's the original Mac one.
Cool. Yeah. So, David, what have you got for us? What should we buy on eBay?
Sort of related, I mean, certainly related to what we're talking about, is a rare, so it's not shrink wrapped, but it's kind of the equivalent. It's a rare, original, unassembled Altair 8800 computer kit.
Crazy, eh?
So I think the term rare is pretty accurate in this case.
Yep. It is.
So this will be interesting to see how much it goes for. Boy, my computer's really dragging, so I'm waiting
and
for it to come up here.
This kit is exactly my first computer. This was the first computer I ever had, but I got it mostly assembled. I got it from a guy who didn't finish, and I got the kit, and I finished the assembly, and this was it. This was the first computer that young Harrington ever owned.
You know, if you guys don't mind, I know that, generally speaking, we don't revisit eBay items, but next show, I wouldn't mind just quickly just seeing what this went for.
Absolutely.
So let's all make a prediction. What do you think? Right now, it's got 6 days, 17 hours, so it just, I think it just got listed today. Mm-hmm. So it's at $1,800. Reserves,
yeah,
not met.
Reserve, yeah.
Hard to say.
I'm going to guess the person put a $5,000 reserve on it.
Yep, I think that's a good guess. I think $4,000 or $5,000 is probably the reserve. I think I wouldn't be surprised if this goes for $8,000.
I think it's going to go huge.
I think it's going to go huge.
I was thinking $7,000,
$8,000. Yeah. I mean, it could go over 10.
It could go over 10,
Yeah. If enough people know about it, you don't see these. Like, I've never seen... Like, this is crazy. Like, you never see that. I think this is a once-in-a-lifetime. If you want this, this is your only chance to buy it.
Here's the thing,
and
though,
you look at the box and the pictures, and it's immediately recognizable as just being brand new.
Yeah.
If I'm the seller of this, then I really need to have some more backstory. You know, like, the description on this is just some bullet points about what comes with it, which is fine, but this... I mean, this is a real auctionable item. I don't know if it's a Christie's kind of auctionable item, but I agree with you guys.
I think so. This could have been in Christie's easy. I don't think it would be a standalone thing, like you wouldn't have a whole auction just for this. But in a vintage computer auction, this absolutely is a Christie's. I mean, it's crazy. The only thing that's not here is the original bill of sale from 1975. But
see, that I think that might have made it might make it more valuable. Yeah, you have the backstory, the receipt, you know. Where's it been? Just where
well,
it
even, even if I didn't have the receipt, I'd still want to know where did this come from? Was somebody just going through their attic and look at that Altair that I never built. I wonder if I could sell that on eBay for a few bucks.
Yeah. And I would guess, a couple of guesses. Now the Altair box, when I was talking about the box, looks brand new. Yes, the Altair box hardware looks new, but it's sitting on top of the MITS box, which granted, might be a little rougher conditions in the parts you can't see, but like if you look at the tape on it and it says MITS, it looks brand new.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it was stored, in a closet indoors. You know, it's not been stored in a garage or in a storage facility, I don't think, or it's been taken care of for
it
30
looks,
years.
Everything's still in the individual bags. Like, it's completely as if you just bought it. It's right out of a time capsule. It's crazy.
Right, so someone bought it, and they obviously didn't do anything with it.
Yep.
Oh, good, it arrived, and they put it in a closet, and that's where it stayed.
Which is bizarre, because how many people were buying these things, and then this wasn't super cheap, so why would you buy it and not even touch it? I wonder if it was new old stock or something, or I'd love to hear the story behind it.
Or it could have been a gift, or it could have been from an estate or something, and someone, this is valuable, but they know what to do with it and suck it away.
Well, they must know it. They have put a reserve on it, so it's not like someone just found this and had no idea what it was.
Yeah, this person knows it's worth something.
Yeah, but I'm really interested to see what it goes for, because it's going to be a lot. It'll go for a lot more than I would spend.
So if you guys did have the discretionary money to buy this, would you build it? Or would you leave it in this pristine kit state?
Are you kidding me? I'd rip it open in first 5 minutes. I'd build the heck out of it. Of course I would.
This is an amazing find, David. This is, I'm lost for words.
Yeah, that's a good question what you ask, because I wouldn't build it. I don't feel qualified enough to build this. So it'd be a decision of, again, if money was no option, do I pay somebody to build it for me that does a really great job, or would I want to keep it? You almost think you want to keep this as a collectible, and it's the state.
Mm-hmm. No way. I'd open it up. The fun of having it, man. I'm going to build it. I'm going to play with it. I'm going to solder over it. It's going to be awesome.
I don't know if I'd use the original capacitors that came with it, though. I might
swap
those out.
Part of the fun is see which ones blow first. Boom!
All right. So my item is not nearly as fun, but I still like it.
But
it's a Televideo 950, and the noteworthy thing is, aside from some stickers on it, on the keyboard and such, which look like maybe some cheat sheet stickers for an application, I couldn't quite zoom in enough.
Yeah, me too. I was trying to figure out what they were.
See if they were like maybe WordStar stickers or something like that. But aside from that, this thing is in amazing condition. The seller says they don't know if it works or not, but when it powers up, you can see that it's got the status line there at the bottom and the cursor, and the screen looks extremely crisp. It doesn't look all diagonal and saggy and that kind of thing. So this, you know, I'm just a sucker for terminals. I think they're cool. And yet the cool part about this is, now, a contemporary of this, I think, I'm not quite sure when the 950 came out, what circa it is, but I saw a digital VT100 that was in good shape, not as good a shape as this, though, sell for about $300. So I don't even think the buy it now is exorbitant on this at $348. So I think it's a good deal, and I think it's in nice shape. And if you want to have a nice vintage terminal to hook up to your nice vintage RS-232 computer, this might not be a bad choice. I mean, look at these photos on here.
Gorgeous, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful looking machine. Like, it's a really lovely industrial design. The form factor is just fantastic on it.
It's always very unique.
Some of the old terminals just had some of the coolest looks, I think.
You know what? It's not. It's reminiscent to me the design of it, just the way it tops of like the early. I mean, it's not exactly the same, but it makes me think of the. I think it was the UNIVAC, like the earliest, you know, type of reel-to-reel computer case cabinets or whatever for UNIVACs. Mm-hmm. So it had that the way it curved on the top like that. Mm-hmm. That's what it makes me think of. But what's that one right there behind you, Earl? Did you say?
This one here.
Yeah.
It's a VT100.
Oh, okay.
I just looked up. This originally sold in 1980. The new price was $1,195. Wow. To buy it now for $348, that's a great deal. That's a major
saving. In 1980, did you say?
1980, it was $1,195 was the brand new price when it first came out.
So it's a little bit newer of a model than the VT100, which I think was mid-70s when that came out.
Yeah, because this will do 19200 baud, so... There's a pretty high bot on this. It goes beyond 9600, so pretty good.
Wow.
What more? How much more do you need?
Mm-hmm. It's as fast as you'd ever need to go, I think. That and 640K, you're good.
Just looking at what the resolution is. Yeah, the resolution is 80 by 24, so it's 80 characters. So it's, you know, that's a very useful terminal.
Mm-hmm. Nice. All right. Well, I promised a abbreviated show. Or an abbreviated show.
I
delivered, but we don't know yet because we still have our closing discussions. Carrington, start us out here. What is going on?
Nothing. All I've done is work. I've done nothing but work for like 3 weeks. It's been crazy. So
I know you've been like Periscope down. Seriously.
Yeah. So and no vintage stuff at all. I started working on a text adventure game for the Apple II just because I need to do something fun. So. But all I've been working on is the parser, trying to teach myself how to develop a language parser. And it's so much more complicated than I thought it would be. So
it is pretty complicated. Are you doing that in BASIC?
Yes. So trying to get refamiliarize myself with AppleSoft BASIC. Just to sort of stretch my muscles a bit leading into Kansas Fest, to just remind myself about Apple programming, or for the Apple II. So I decided, I'm going to write a quick language parser, a natural language and man, like just when you start getting into adverbs and transitive versus intransitive verbs and all those things, I'm like, okay, how the heck do I parse this darn sentence? And the string manipulation is so terrible in AppleSoft. It's just like, oh my goodness. So I need to write some machine language string handling routines, I think. But then I'll have written them too close to Kansas Fest to use them if I want to do anything there. So I'm just doing it for fun. So I've been doing a little bit of that. Mostly just got my motorcycle out of storage because the weather got nice for a bit. But then on the weekend it snowed. Welcome to Canada.
Really?
When I was in Montreal on Saturday, on Friday, it was an ice storm. Like crazy snow stayed on the ground, ice storm everywhere. And I'm driving around a city that I don't know. And all the signs are in another language. I'm like, why am I here? Just Yeah.
It's a little late in the season for that, isn't it?
Very late. It was quite the surprise. It's beautiful out, and today it's, you know, 10 or 11 degrees and sunny, so it's nice again. But this, yeah, on Friday was ice and snow here in Ontario. Anyway, that's what's new with me. Very, very little.
David, nothing really new with you either, huh? I mean, nothing going on?
No, other than, you know, getting prepared for the VCFE. Let me read a couple of other comments real quick, and then I'll... And then,
oh, yeah.
I'll mention something else. So Randy mentioned that, it moved here, and my computer's going so slow. The next show will be before months in on the TI-59.
Nice. Cool.
So floppy days. And then he said he was yelling at the screens, but we didn't hear him. He needs a mic so he can talk to us. And then he also mentioned some other good vintage computer books. We'll save that for other gift ideas. And let's see. Lewis mentioned that his wife would leave him, but he would love to take out a second mortgage and get that Altair. And then he asked about, or he said, there was a shipment that disappeared originally. Could it have been one of those? Was this an early unit or later serial number, which I don't think the person says, but no, it wasn't the one that was lost, because the original one that was lost was a prototype, and it didn't look like this Altair. It more resembled the one that's on the cover of Pop Electronics.
Right.
Because I know Ed Roberts redesigned it after they lost the prototype, and that's when he came up with the Altair bus, which was then called the S-100 bus. So the only other thing to mention is, so hope you can make it to the VCF SE. If you can't, just be looking out on the Twitter feed and you know, for announcements, pictures, and stuff. But there's also, in the show notes, there's a YouTube channel now, or YouTube site. So it's just youtube.com/VCFSE1. There's one video there right now. It's my interview with Lonnie Mims. But that's
why
it won't be. Sorry?
Why one?
It wouldn't let me do it without the one.
Oh.
And you know, and the one's okay because it's 1.0. But
you have to do it on your channel every year.
Yeah. I know. I didn't want to do it that way. It wouldn't let me. I don't know if it was a... I don't know. I don't remember now. I
wonder if they have length limitations.
Maybe that was it. But anyway, that's where I'll be streaming any video that we do, or uploading it, you know, later. So look there. And then, you know, and also the regular webpage, the vintage.org webpage, will be in the show notes. So you can always go there, and there'll be links and stuff too. So yeah, it's looking to be a really good show.
Cool. Awesome.
I'm excited. How are you, Earl?
Me? Well,
oh,
I got
a lot of new stuff.
I got a couple things brewing. I'm getting RetroBits back on a monthly track, and I'm also introducing a couple of new podcasts that are going to be part of the RetroBits family. But
no more podcasts. No.
They're we need more podcasts for. These are specific themed. One is called Chicken Lips Radio, and that's about Commodore computers.
I was against that name.
I was all for that name.
Yeah, you guys, you pretty much canceled out. But all the Commodore folks that I've talked to like the name.
I think it's pretty catchy. So,
and if you're not a Commodore fan, you probably don't know, but the Commodore people tend to call the Commodore logo either the chicken head or chicken lips. And chicken lips was actually the phrase used by the people who worked at Commodore. So this is kind of
an inside phrase.
Yeah,
I've never heard chicken lips before. I'd always heard the chicken head, but
yeah.
I've never heard chicken lips.
Yeah, and so this is an homage
to
them.
Oh, yeah, I guess I've always heard chicken head usually.
Yep. That's why I like the chicken lips, because I've never heard it before. But that's only one of your two new podcasts, dude.
Yeah. The other one is called Next Without Four, which is a basic error message. And the podcast is going to be about programming retro computers.
Maybe you'll help me with my language parser.
It'll be whether you're programming with the old languages that were back then or with this vast array of new development tools that just keep coming out for all of these things. You know, on the Apple side, I talked about Martin Hayes, the short language, and the Supermon. There's all kinds of things that you see coming out all the time for all these different retro platforms, people coming out with sprite editors or character set editors or, you know, just – great stuff. So, anyway, I'm looking forward to those, and each one of those will be coming out once per month, too. So, I'm kind of back in the one podcast per week-ish realm. That used to work. I have to make sure to be disciplined with my time, though, not go down a rat hole. And those will be on iTunes as soon as possible. So, when they come out, I'll let you guys know.
Awesome.
I've almost got the first Next Without 4 done, and that one is on DBase 3+.
I'm really looking forward to that. I can't think of any podcasts about retro programming, so I'm really excited that this exists. I'm going to be an eager listener.
I'll look forward to that, because that was one of the few things I ever did, if you want to call it programming, DBase. Remember, I think we talked about it some.
We did. That's right.
So that's one of the few little, you know, I don't think it was really programming what I did, but it was, you know.
But you'd taken a course on
worked with it,
as
yeah.
I recall.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's what's new with me. And I guess that wraps us up. Guys, any parting shots?
Go.
Really looking forward to seeing the photos and video and coverage from the show, David.
So, and we will have another podcast next week, everyone. So remember to listen in next Saturday.
That's right. Remember, Saturday, April 20th at 6 p.m. Eastern, live from VCFSE, we're going to have David telling us how the show is going. So
it's going to be Saturday instead of Sunday. It's going to be 2 hours later than the normal time, all so that David's making it likely that I'll forget.
Nah, he'll be there, Carrington. We'll remind
I'll tweet
you.
Regularly.
Right, good. We'll see what happens.
So that is the show. And our next get-together, as we just mentioned, is in just under a week. Woohoo! David will be at the Vintage Computer Festival Southeast. At least we hope he's going to be there after putting the show together and organizing it. And he will demo his side of the show from there. Yes! As we mentioned, that's on Saturday, April 20th at 6 p.m. Eastern. You'll find links to the live broadcast at rcrpodcast.com, where you'll also find links to the forum as well as the show notes. We are at rcrpodcast on Twitter. You can send feedback, which we love to get, and always
love it,
at feedback at retropodcast. First day with my new mouth. Feedback at rcrpodcast.com. And say something about us on iTunes. You know,
something.
I don't know. Say we taste like a pickle, or you know, whatever. Just say something about the RCR podcast.
Uh-huh.
You know, give us a rating over there. And until next time, retro
computer.
Oh, okay. We all
take
got
care,
it.